And I read on the Daily Maverick over the weekend, again, you know, an extraordinarily persuasive argument by Nathi Mdlala, who is a very senior medical professional in Gauteng and somebody who is on the front line. He's a clinician working with people who are COVID-19 and working with ICU patients. He's chief of ICU at George Macquarie Academic Hospital in Gauteng. And he's saying, please let us use us. Let us use us. I mean, the only thing it seems to him is that academic evidence is lacking. Everything else, he says, points to the fact that ivermectin could be and should be a very valuable tool in an effective fight against people who are infected and who are suffering. Mark Hayward, we wanted to speak to Dr. Nathi Mdlala, but he's a clinician. He's working with people in ICU at this time of the day, not available to speak to radio stations. Mark, that's that's not in any way suggesting that you don't have more important things to do than talk to radio stations. But you are more available, I think, for understandable reasons than Dr. Mdlala. You wrote an editorial, an op-ed piece about this, and it is, I think, for people who understand nuance and appreciate nuance, it is a very difficult thing to be cut and dried, black and white about.
Good afternoon, John. Yes, I think you shouldn't feel bad about not having a cut and dried position because it is complicated. And part of the purpose of my article was to try to cut a path between two fiercely opposing sides at the moment. Those who are arguing that ivermectin use should be allowed, and those, like you mentioned, like Professor Rees from South African Health Products Regulatory Authority, who are arguing that it shouldn't be allowed. And, you know, what my article tries to do is to start from Nathi's and Mdlala's position. I work closely with him. As you say, he is the chief intensivist in a very, very busy hospital, and say we should at least be listening to our clinicians and considering the evidence and making room for proper approved use of this drug, even if it has not met every single bar that may be required by regulatory authorities, because we are in an emergency. And as you said in your introduction, John, there is strong anecdotal evidence that it works. I mean, after publishing my article, my GP, who I haven't seen for 9-12 months, contacted me today, and he runs a practice in the middle of Johannesburg in Parktown, so it's very run-of-the-middle-class practice, and he said, I'm using it and I'm seeing benefits. So what I want your listeners to understand is I'm not saying that the final word has been said on this. We are awaiting studies at the moment, but I'm saying that in the context of an emergency, a rigid prohibition is probably doing more harm than good.
Yeah, so one of the first conversations I had was with Jeremy Nell, who is on that that committee which looks at new medicines and examined the evidence for COVID-19 and felt that the studies which showed efficacy had been poorly designed and so on, and felt that
Andrew Hill,
that his meta-analysis also wasn't sufficiently convincing to recommend a rapid process of authorizing ivermectin. And I said to Jeremy, what are the side effects? And he said, well, not much. And if that's the case, because one of the rules of medicine is do no harm. Yeah. And if there is significant harm, then one must be very cautious. But if there is limited harm and there is potential significant benefit, then I do think one has to sort of frame the approach in that way.
Look, I think I agree with you. First of all, remember we're in an unprecedented and new situation. You know, I actually canvassed Professor Jeremy Nell, who is also the head of infectious diseases at another very, very busy hospital, to seek his views on it before I wrote my article because I didn't want to be irresponsible. And he said just what you've said to me as well, which is that one of the things about ivermectin that is beyond question is that it's a safe medicine. You know, Nati and Bladla says in his article that there's been 3.2 billion pills consumed in 30 years. It's a safe medicine if it is taken properly. Nothing is safe if you overdose on it, if you take it in the wrong way. And that's one of the problems with people, many, many people we hear who are now just getting hold of it from vets or getting hold of it. And there are cases of poisoning and overdosing. So let's be clear that it's only safe if it is used properly. So the question is not safety, which is usually one of the big considerations of regulatory authorities. The question is efficacy. And as Jeremy Nell said to you, the academic evidence, which you said is lacking, it's not lacking, it's just that it is not yet fully persuasive. You know, Professor Andrew Hill, who you mentioned, is an academic at the University of Liverpool. His research, the analyses that he's doing, are showing positive results, but they're not enough, so they can be criticized.
And as Jeremy Nell said to me, he does say at the end of the meta-analysis that further studies need to be done.
Exactly, and that analysis on which a lot of people are basing their claims was a preliminary analysis, and in fact, his final analysis is due literally in the next couple of days, and that may shed further light, but there are also some what we call big randomized controlled trials where people like Jeremy would be happier with the structure of those trials, which are also due fairly soon. So I think, John, quite a number of people are saying, and I've seen a letter that's on its way to President Ramaphosa soon, are saying is, look, the least we should be doing is putting systems in place in the event that this drug does prove to have the benefits and the properties that many people are pointing to in its use off-label in South Africa in relation to COVID-19.
Mark Hayward, editor of Maverick Citizen, thanks very much for talking to us this afternoon.